today we are talking about the habits, goals, and disciplines that it takes to be a business owner. And so let's go ahead. The question that I thought would be good to start with, because this is where we ended up last week, is this idea of how do we handle time management? Juanita, why don't you start? I'll share what you and I were talking about off screen. I need a few seconds to process it.
Okay, that's so okay.
How do you, as a business owner, handle the time management aspect of being a business owner?
Well, for me, one of the best exercises that, and it's still something that I do regularly because I have to track my time. But when I first got into business for myself was learning to keep track of my time. Where was I spending all my energy? Where was I spending my efforts? You know, what was making effective use of my time? What did that look like? And what was not being effective? And one of the biggest surprises that I had, and this was years ago, was I was spending 2 to 3 hours a day on email. And it was like, oh my gosh, I've got to be productive. I can't just be responding to email and not be productive. So I've got to somehow figure out how to make this into a productive venture and not just spending time looking at email and trying to respond to those. So I think just really number one, tracking your time, knowing where you're spending your time is really, really important. Another thing that was very enlightening for me some years ago, I was teaching a class on time management. And so somebody had mentioned something about, well, you know, it's no big deal. I just wasted a couple of minutes. So that kind of spurred me to come up with I just made a little Excel spreadsheet, right? If you waste 5 minutes a day, if you waste 10 minutes a day, and I just did this little chart of what that would look like over a year's basis. And that became such a hit in the classes that now I have shared that with a number of different people just because they want it. And I keep it on my phone because people are always asking me that question. If we waste just 5 minutes a day, and we assume 5 days a week and 50 weeks a year. I was even nice and gave everybody 2 weeks vacation, counting those extra 2 weeks. That's over 20 hours a year. Okay. If we waste just 5 minutes an hour a day, 40 minutes a day, 5 minutes an hour, if we just waste 5 minutes an hour, that's over 160 hours a year. That's 4 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. That if I'm not making good use of my time, if I'm not paying attention to where that time is being frittered away, or, you know, I spend 5 minutes playing a game on my phone, you know, 5 minutes chit-chatting that's not productive, that turns into a lot of time and energy. And think about that, not only for you as the entrepreneur, but what happens if you have employees? And now you're paying them for those 5 wasted minutes every day or every hour. So I took that same chart and I moved it over and put dollar amounts to it. So if you're wasting 5 minutes a day at a $20, just $20, well, let's do 15 because that's the new, you know, minimum threshold that everybody's looking at. At 5 minutes a day for 50 weeks, that would be $312. Okay, it doesn't sound too bad. But 5 minutes an hour at $15, that's $2,500 per employee that you're paying that you're not getting any productive time out of. So just beginning to take, you know, concept of time is valuable and we've really got to pay attention to it. And as the owner, how am I spending my time? Because that typically translates to how my employees might be behaving or utilizing their time effectively as well. So that was some of my input that was valuable for me. So,
and you know, quite honestly, I think that's been one of the biggest areas of requests that I have seen in this pandemic world, right? Because all of a sudden everybody had a whole chunk of time back, right? And so one of the it was always in the coaching program, but one of those places I've realized we really need to dial in on, and I've emphasized it the last year, is precisely that, and I call that energy leaks, right? Like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. Yep. And the reality is, if you think it's 5 minutes, it's probably 10 or 15.
Yeah.
Because by the time you become aware of it, it's a bigger problem than you let on, right?
Right.
And so all of a sudden, it's 5 minutes, but if you have 3 or 4 employees talking, right, that wasted time, it's not 5 minutes, it was 20. Because you have all 4 employees you have to count for. And so I really like that. A couple of the things that we do to help follow up with that is, Scott, I want to hear your input, because I think I saw that you posted something about a time management app. So I want to hear a bit of your journey. But some of those things that we do is we do a calendar deep dive, and we make sure. So I walk my clients through color coding their calendar. So we have personal family time, we have business development, we have making money, and we have administrative tasks. And then sometimes we'll throw in like a volunteer if they're heavily involved in their community somewhere. So we break their calendar down into all five sections and say, are all five sections well represented? They don't have to be balanced, right? We've talked before about balance is a myth. Instead, we talk about integration. So it doesn't mean like each one has to get 20 hours or whatever. But we talk about that integration. The number one thing that I do is I keep that annoying iPhone screen time use on all of my devices so that every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. I get a report that tells me how I spent my time, because that goes into my weekly reflection, that goes into my weekly journal. I track all of that stuff because I'm precisely aware a 10-minute wasted time in a moment turns into an hour or two very quickly, and then I've lost days of productivity in a given year. But Scott, I think you were posting something this week. Why don't you walk us through a bit of what your journey looks like?
Yeah. I like Juanita talking about what I describe to clients I work with as a time audit. Like I'll have them for 1 week, every 30 minutes or so, or every hour at the very most, write down, what are you doing at this moment right now? And then that's 40 hours of how they spent their time. And it gives them an opportunity to really see, how am I actually using my time? Because what I find when I do that exercise, when I've done it myself, when I do it with clients, is what they find out is never what they expect. You know, we find out like, wow, I'm really wasting a lot of time on this thing or that thing. So that, I think, is just a good simple exercise that everybody needs to do every once in a while, is just do a little quick time audit. Once an hour, set a timer on your phone, you know, once an hour to write down, what are you doing right now? Another thing that I've been doing is for the last few years, there's Moses a long time ago said that, so teach us the number of days that we may get a heart of wisdom. And I thought, like, how can I start to see time differently, to know like we all have, you know, a certain amount of time in this life. Doesn't matter if you're Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, whoever's number one today as the richest person in the world, or some homeless guy on the street, or just, you know, one of us, we all have the same 24 hours. So I don't know if you can see this, but I got this jar and it's got these beads in it. And I went to Hobby Lobby. And I did just the math. Like, this is kind of a sadistic thing to do, but if you go to IRS, no, not the IRS, Social Security's website, you can put in your birth date and it'll kick back to you like how long you're expected to live, which is kind of a morbid thing. You can go there and put in my birthday. For me, it's January or May 24th, 1970. And it'll say, based on your current age, I'm going to be 51 this year. I'm going to live to be, I think it would say right now, about like 77 or 78. And something miraculous happens. Once you reach 65 and you put in your age, it'll show you're going to live to like in your 80s. There's something about this magic 65 threshold. If you can live to that, you're going to end up living longer. But what I did was I did that, and then I computed how many months does that equate that I've got left. And so every month I take one of these little beads out of that jar and I let it sit on my desk in my morning time, and then I throw it in the trash, because that's a month that's gone. And did I actually spend that month doing the right stuff, you know, making an impact, you know, doing something significant? So that is like a visual reminder. Every day I see this jar and the beads are... you probably should get a jar that's like proportional to how much time you've got. Mine looks like I'm about done.
You're about to kick the bucket, Scott.
Yeah, I got way too big a jar. So find one that's proportional to, like, you know, how old you are versus what you got left. So that's one thing in the time audit. The other thing that I've been doing lately is avoiding multitasking. Like, there is... you know, nothing better to kill productivity than multitasking. Like, our brain thinks that if I'm working on three things at the same time, and I'm not talking like juggling three things literally at the same time, but I'm working on some email for, you know, 15 minutes, then I jump to, you know, making some calls, and I jump to something else. It's the best way to get, you know, nothing done and to be frustrated. So the best approach I've found is to block out, like, probably for me, about 2 hour time blocks work best, where I'm just like, I can get into a state of flow for about 2 hours, and then scheduling what I call sand, the stuff that doesn't matter much in your life, like plan your sand is kind of the way I look at it. So I've got like a 15 minute sand block in the morning and one in the afternoon to do the emails and the phone calls and kind of the follow-up stuff. That way you can really, I find like I get far more done when I have those longer stretches of time. And for me, it's about 2 hours. And there's a really great book called Deep Work, if you want more detail on that and on the science behind it, how, and you could just try it. You don't need any research. Just try it, like see just how much more productive you are when you spend, you know, an hour or two time blocks working on specific things that are ultimately leading to your goals, and then schedule the minutia, the sand, the little stuff for those blocks, and turn off all your social media and things popping up and buzzing and ringing, and you'll get way more done.
We're so afraid of missing out on something, right? That we keep those constant notifications, and it really the guy who wrote Deep Work is Cal Newport, and he's written a couple of books, and they're absolutely phenomenal. And if you're interested in good time management, he's a great guy to start with. Scott, I'd be interested to follow up with you because it feels like this jar that you're using helps keep you tracked and focused. How do you help use that and this kind of awareness to set meaningful goals?
To set meaningful goals, I mean, I realize that time is precious, and it's all about really understanding, for me, the things that I focus on are rocks, like things you can do in 90 days. Like if you Google, you know, rock exercise or rock illustration on YouTube for time management, you'll find, like, I think it was some professor years ago, some philosophy professor did this little experiment, put in a bunch of rocks, asked his students, you know, is the jar full yet? And they said, yeah, it's full. And then he poured in some gravel, and they're like, is it full yet? Yeah, it's full. Now then he poured in some sand, and they're like, and now they're kind of catching on. They're like, maybe it's not full yet. And then he poured in water last. And the whole focus there is that if you pour in the sand first, you're not going to be able to get the rocks in. And so for me, it's all about looking at what's most important in my personal life and in my career, my business life, and making sure every day I'm focused on those. And that's another good exercise you can do. In fact, I was talking to a client yesterday, and we were looking through her things that she's been doing. And I told her, go back and look at your activity from the previous week and see where you can draw a line between those things you're actually doing and your rocks. Because if you can connect everything you're doing, or at least my rule is about 75%. I don't think it's possible 100%, you know, to be perfect. But if you can spend 75% of your time each week working on your rocks, your big priorities, you're going to get a lot of stuff done. And so that's a good exercise too, as you're planning each day, is to focus on, you know, what am I ultimately trying to accomplish in the next 90 days? Because that's the other part of this too, is 90 days, I've just found from my experience, is about the longest most people can stay focused on any one thing. Like, you know, the perfect example is you go to a gym or a fitness facility anywhere in the town you live in on January. Like I went to get a new iPhone last year around January, and I couldn't find a parking spot because the AT&T store was like right next to some 24-hour fitness place. Then I had a problem with it in around June, and I went back, and there was like a zillion spots. It was the same time of day. Nobody was at the fitness place anymore, right?
Moving across.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, and so it's like 90 days is just enough time to, you know, get something done that you won't lose focus. And it's also enough time that once you accomplish it, it feels good and it fuels you for the next 90 days. So with my clients, I'm always working in 90 day windows, 90 days, 90 days, every 90 days. And then boiling that down to what am I doing today to accomplish or take one step forward in that 90 day journey is a great way to stay focused and to stay motivated too, because setting a goal for a year or 5 years from now is really challenging to stay motivated, you know, right now today. That's just too far out.
Yeah. I want to capitalize on that for just a second, because there was a study done years and years ago with graduates, and I don't remember if it was Harvard or Yale, but one of those Ivy League colleges, that said having those goals And not just having them, but having them written down makes a tremendous difference. They surveyed a graduating class from whichever Ivy League college it was. They surveyed this graduating class and asked how many actually had their future goals written down. Only about 3% of the class actually had those goals established and written down. 20 years later, they resurveyed that same graduating class, and that 3% that had written goals had done more and amassed more wealth and accomplished more than the other 97% of the class. So it really goes to show that we've got to stay focused on those goals, keep them in front of us, and not just, you know, we get a goal in our head or, you know, we want to shoot for this, but we don't put it down so it becomes concrete, so it's something we're really working towards. So putting that in writing really has a big impact and can impact because it holds us accountable. It's something in our head.
Yeah, I remember the first goal I ever wrote down. The short version, my junior year of high school, I was eliminated from the state wrestling tournament by this guy named Blake. I won't give his last name just in case he watches, but that's his real first name. So I lost to Blake. He's still ingrained in my memory. Yeah. Knocked me out of the state tournament my junior year. And coming into my senior year, coach said, write down your goals and number one, better be beating Blake, right? Like we both knew this just ended badly. And so I wrote it down and he plastered it on the wall to the wrestling room. And every day I walked in and I saw that. And every day when practice sucked, right? 3 hours in the heat, wrestling and sparring 5 days a week. And then we had 2 days. And that very early on in the season, wouldn't you know it, I got paired in a tournament against Blake. And like I went out and just destroyed the guy. I mean, humble brag right there, right? But I firmly attribute it to the fact that it was written down, it was public, and everybody knew that was the number one goal I had. I wanted to avenge that loss. I don't think if I would have taken the time to write it down, I would have done that. And since then, yeah, you guys are right on some of the research on writing goals and what it means to be aware of writing them down, putting them public, have some sort of accountability system.
Yeah,
is the secret. And so that's really one of those things. Scott, I like the way you think. That's very similar to the way I set goals. Psychologically, they call it chunking. And so we kind of chunk. I chunk both tasks and goals into similar fields. Which chunking sounded a bit more elegant than it is. But it's really one of those things that, like, so you were talking, you know, you create those spaces for email. I would chunk email and text messages and all those sorts of things. Our brain works well in similar patterns, right? It's the reason our phone numbers are set up the way they are, right? Like, we like the 3 digits, we like the 4 digits. Our brain can comprehend that. So if you compare your daily tasks and your goals together and tie them together somehow, we tend to do very well in just remembering them and then being able to set action on them. And then one of those things that I always build into the coaching program is we talk about you have to reward yourself, because psychologically, if you achieve a goal and you don't reward yourself, eventually your brain will say, well, what's the point in reaching this goal? Mm-hmm. Right? Like we demotivate ourselves by accomplishing something and not celebrating that win somehow. And so every single one of my coaching clients can tell you how sick and tired they are of trying to think of rewards to give themselves. But it's the only way we can stay disciplined, because eventually you're like, I've rewarded myself with everything that I want. And there's a reason your life is going so well, because we have clear goals, you're following the plan, and you've rewarded yourself, and you're just intrinsically now motivated. And I think that leads into the next question, Juanita. I'd love to start with you on this one. As we track these meaningful goals, is how do you then keep track of those wins? So I've talked about you reward yourself, but the reality is there's lots of ways that looks. My standard line is rewards have to be meaningful and significant. That doesn't mean expensive, right? If that means logging out of work 30 minutes early to go get your favorite Starbucks drink, it might cost you, well, $12 because you're going to Starbucks, buy local, but it doesn't have to be expensive, right? So how are some of those ways that you keep track of wins to keep yourself motivated and focused?
Yeah. Well, for me, especially over these last 3 or 4 years where I've been more focused on really developing and building the business, it's been, for me, really watching the numbers, okay, keeping track of that and doing it not just at the end of the year, right? That's great to see, you know, where you've succeeded, right? But you know, breaking that up early in the year. I think I shared last week, and I think maybe it was just in our discussion, our prep discussion as we were talking about this, that I mean, I surprised myself that I, you know, there's already been a 10% increase in clients this year. And it's like, wow, okay. And I didn't know that until I happened to sit down and look at the numbers. So for me, it's really been tracking that, tracking my successes with clients, especially when it's a referral. If somebody shares word of mouth and they say, oh, well, I got your name from so-and-so, I track that as a win. And for me, that's a big thing because obviously word of mouth is how my business grows. And those kinds of referrals are really helpful. So that's a big piece for me is that watching the numbers and then tracking those when somebody does get a referral or give a referral and rewarding them for the referral. I always send a thank you note, stick a little, you know, Starbucks card or something like that, gift card in there, you know, thanks for the referral. I appreciate this. You know, that's how my business grows. So I try to reward them as well when I see those kinds of things coming in.
Yeah, I like that, Juanita. I talk to clients all the time, especially my process improvement clients, about metrics. Like, how do you know if you're winning or losing if you're not keeping score, right? Like, right. It's like you're playing the game every day. And it's like, well, if there's no scoreboard, you know, maybe playing the game is fun. But at some point, you got to look and see, is it working? You know, and that's what metrics do. So that I do that same thing. I have metrics, just a handful. I think metrics are something that it's really easy to go sideways on and get, you know, 14 different graphs and charts and way too many numbers. And then you're like, man, which one of these matters? So for me, it's, you know, a couple, two or three key metrics. The other thing that I try to do at least once a month is take what I call a clarity break, which is just time to think. Like nobody's ever accused most other people of spending too much time thinking, right? Like if you think about like how, when's the last time somebody accused you of spending too much time thinking, right? But we all know having a chance to stop and rest and look back is really critical to succeeding and moving forward. Cause we're always, like I was talking to this client, the small business owner yesterday, and we just get focused on moving forward. And we just feel like we're just always going forward and we never realize just how much we've actually, how far we've come, you know? So it's like you're climbing this mountain. Every once in a while, you got to stop, turn around and look back to see like how far you've come, because you don't realize like, hey, we've really come a long way when you're just always looking forward. So those clarity breaks, I think, are really key to success. And then another just simple tip is keeping a done list. Like when you get something done, put it on a list so that maybe once a month you can actually see what have I accomplished. Because again, when we're always looking forward, it doesn't seem like, you know, what have I gotten done this month? You know, and then sometimes you look at that list and you say, yeah, I got a lot of things done. Do these really matter? Maybe not. And that'll help you refocus the next month to figure out like I'm not prioritizing and working on the right stuff because I got a lot of stuff done. But the goal is not to get a bunch of things done, it's to get the right things done. And that's really what, you know, we'll talk probably later more about priorities. So those are just a couple of ways that I find helpful to keep score and take a breath every once in a while and celebrate, you know, success. And those are great times to plan too, when you've got a chance to take a little clarity break away from your office, away from all your gadgets.
Yep.
And think about the next 90 days. I definitely recommend doing that like every 90 days, resetting, having that time to clear your head.
Yeah. Interesting. There's a website that talks about white space, which is exactly what you're referring to, is just taking some of that, you know, time, and they, for whatever reason, they named it white space, but taking that time to just think, right? And really focus on, okay, what about, you know, what do I need? What's going on? Have I paid attention to, you know, all the things that are necessary? And taking a look back, where have I come from? Yeah. Yeah. For me, my win pile and my done pile is my filing pile. It's like, okay, now it's done. I can put it in the filings. So when my filing pile gets really high, I know I've gotten a lot accomplished.
good to stay on top of that one. We won't go into my filing system. It does not work as a success metric. It works as a catch-all for things that don't want to do. But Scott, I like that, and this idea of handling of keeping track of our wins, right? Mm-hmm. That if we're not careful, it can feel like we're just spinning our wheels. And that intentional routine, like one of the things similar to Juanita, I sat down a little while ago and said, what does it actually take to be minimally profitable? Like, I don't even talk about, hey, we're buying Caribbean islands. Like, do I actually know what the bare viable minimum is for me? If I total up all of my expenses every month, what do I need to do to break even? And then I'll, you know, so I run all those numbers and I look at what I'm making and I thought, I'm a profitable business. But you don't actually know that, right? Like, I felt like I was. Our bills were getting paid, so I must be. But all of a sudden, having that real concrete data made it like, this is a real thing, right? Things are happening. The bills are being paid. My income is greater than the expenses. What a great place to be. And the reality is, and this is maybe where we could spend a lot of time, and I'll try not to kill like the exciting energy we have. But the next question that we asked, I think, follows up really well with this. Look, sometimes things don't go very well, and we can do all the filing we want, and we can do all of the time chunking we want, and we can do all of the goal setting that we want. And sometimes you're still going to fail. And in those moments, it becomes extraordinarily easy to get a defeatist mindset or to beat yourself up or to compare yourself to somebody else. So share with us the wisdom you two have on how do you deal with failure?
Not well. No.
Move on. Good. We're done.
Don't like to, right? Not my preference. It's not at the top of my list. But it is something that it's my focus, and I guess this is just my bent, that it's always an opportunity for growth. For me, it's for learning. It's how could I have done it better? What should I have done differently? How could I have made this a success? Because so many people don't remember us. I mean, most people are not going to remember us for all the times we messed up, right? What are they going to remember us for? I mean, it's the old saying, right? How many times did Babe Ruth hit a home run? Well, he struck out a lot more times than he hit home runs. And so we remember him for the home runs, the successes. We don't remember him for all the failures. So for me, it's really just taking some time, focus on it, look back at it. Don't dwell on it, but at least take a good hard look. Where was the issue? What was the concern? You know, what was the problem? How did I lose this client, or how did this client, were they not happy? What didn't I do that I could have done? So it's really just for me a learning experience and really turning it around and saying, okay, now how do I do that better going forward? So that's for me the biggest piece. The avoid comparison issue, that's a tough one, right? Because you see everybody else out there, you hear about all these other businesses that are maybe doing the same as you are. And we all want to make ourselves look good and, you know, look successful and make it sound like we've got all the clients in the world that we possibly need. And, you know, we could never, you know, take on another one. But that's an unfair comparison. You know, comparisons just tear us down. We really need to compare to our goals, our standards. What are our expectations? Are we meeting them? And stop comparing us to other people. They may have different standards. They may not be providing the service at the level that you do, or with the same integrity or the same honesty. So yeah, they might have a lot bigger numbers, but they may not have retention of clients. I had an employee that was working for me say to me, I can't believe you get so much repeat business. They said, your customers just keep coming back and coming back and coming back for similar services. And I say, well, that's because I do my best to whatever I can to make sure that they're satisfied. It's not, you know, am I happy? Am I satisfied? But are they satisfied? And that's why I think so many of them come back, because they appreciate that commitment to their satisfaction. So again, I don't necessarily compare my numbers to other companies or other businesses similar to mine. I compare it to my own internal, what are my expectations? What are my goals? What am I trying to accomplish? So.
Yeah. I agree, Juanita. That is, we get into trouble when we compare ourselves to others. And really, like you're saying, the most important comparison you can make is to yourself. Am I getting better at what I do? Am I growing my business? Am I having a greater impact? And as someone who actually gets to see behind the curtain of individual and business finances, I'll tell you, what you see is not reality. Most people are broke. Living paycheck to paycheck. They're living in way too big of houses. They're driving too big of cars. And the reality is, you know, what you see is not true. And so comparisons, you know, the easiest way is just to stay off social media, you know, and not see what other people are doing. Because that's their highlight reel. Like whoever, yep. When's the last time you saw someone on social media say, yay, I just filed for bankruptcy. Yay, I just got divorced. Yay, yeah. I just found out my husband's cheating on me, right? Like, no, you don't see that stuff there. You see the highlight reel. And, you know, and failure is just, you know, part of succeeding. I think someone way smarter than me once said that the difference between average people and successful people is how they react to failure, you know? And so when you can react to failure as an opportunity to learn and grow, it will lead to success. Because honestly, I think in my career early on, I didn't have many failures. And then when I started to have some failures and going out on my own, it really hurt, you know, because it's like, hey, this is actually harder than I thought it was, because I had it so easy early on. So failure is just something you've got to get past. And I think the sooner you fail, the better too. I mean, if you can fail a lot early on and learn. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, hiring a coach can help avoid too, is failure. I think that's one of the things that people don't often think about, is that how can I minimize failure? Well, connect with people who have failed more than you have, and they'll teach you what not to do, right? Like, this is the reason why we get into these networking groups, why we hire coaches, you know, why we look for help, so that we don't make the same mistakes. Because believe me, the failures you experience, someone else has probably experienced. Nobody anymore, I don't think, is failing in a unique way that's, you know, never been, you know, done before, right? So to find other people that have failed and learn from them before you make that mistake, you know, learn from their failures. And that's what I think a good coach and just good mentors can certainly help with.
Yeah. And those good mentors that can, when one of those failures do come, I remember this with, I have a business coach that gives me insights many times. And one of my first, where they weren't going to extend my contract, I was like, what do you mean you're not going to extend my contract? You know, I mean, and he had to sit down and say, hey, wait a minute, think about it. What is this propelling you onto something bigger and better? And absolutely it did, right? But I wasn't looking at that. I was wallowing in, oh, my contract's, you know, not being extended. And yet it opened up tons of doors that contract continued, I may not have been doing what I'm doing now. Okay. And so really not seeing beyond that one little failure can really harm us, because it could have really kept me, you know, settled in mediocrity instead of really excelling. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, Juanita, like thinking back on your life, you know, all the failures that you've experienced. Nobody can say, you know, I've never experienced any failures. Like I just said a minute ago, I didn't have many failures, but I still had lots of failures. And when you look back on that and see, like, every one of those failures led to something bigger and better. It may have taken some time. So that's another way to deal with failure, to know, like, hey, I've failed in the past. And what happened? Well, I'm still alive. I'm still breathing. You know, I didn't lose my life. You know, the most important thing is still there. But I actually learned and I grew. And even if it took a little bit of time, it generally leads to something positive if you react the right way. And I think that's the key thing. It's like, you know, are you reacting the right way? Because if you give up, you know, that's the quickest way to fail, right? Is to give up. You're guaranteed to fail when you give up. So,
right. Well, and that is the only failure, really, is the giving up. Because if you keep moving and you move ahead, you're not failing, right? You're just learning. I mean, what was it Thomas Edison said? I found 1,000 ways that the light bulb doesn't work, but only one way that, right? And so, you know, just have to keep moving and not wallow in those failures, because that really does destroy all your motivation. It destroys anything you have about the business. So,
yeah. And it's interesting that somewhere, I remember our oldest, who's 11 now, somewhere around like age 5 or 6 was the first time she really had to contemplate failure, right? And I don't even remember what it was, right? She was in kindergarten. It couldn't have been that bad. But it was one of those, like, I just remember her being in tears. Oh my gosh, Dad, I failed. What are you talking about? Like, this is a kindergarten assignment. You haven't failed anything. You don't even know what life is yet, kid. And one of the, you know, Scott, similar to you, but one of those things I tell people is, if you're still alive and breathing, you've made it through 100% of whatever life is thrown at you. Your success rate is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. And if you think back to being a parent, the first time your kid fell, You're like, well, they failed. Walking must not be for them. And you just pick them. Like, when we're younger, failure is built into who we are, right? We try to roll over and we can't. We try to crawl and we can't. We try to walk and we can't. We try to walk up the stairs and we can't. But eventually we string together enough failures that you experience success. And boy, the hard thing is somewhere, again, somewhere on age five, I think it kind of naturally kicks in that we start to become fear adverse, right? Failure adverse. I can't fail. I have to present this perfected image. When really our lives, it's probably not fair to define your life by successes. It's more fair to describe it by the failures you've happened to overcome. I think that's a much better way to look at it. That sure doesn't feel good, and I'm not sure that will get me a job if I put that on my resume. Like, I'm really great at failing. I'll let you down, everybody. Like, yeah, trust me, there's one thing I can do really well. It's disappoint you. Yeah. Don't think I'll get the job. But that's the reality of life, right? We go from failure to failure, and continuing to do that, eventually you find yourself successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And that means so
it does. It does. And again, boy, it's almost like we planned this. Here's our next question. In the midst of those failures, in the midst of that struggle, where maybe you're here today and saying, gosh, I really thought I was going to get that contract and I didn't, right? It's entirely possible. Somebody's watching this on the replay and saying, yep, I get you. I'm in that failure spot. How do you continue as a business owner to focus on the impact you're trying to have and not the image you're projecting, right? Scott, you said stay off social media. That's maybe a good first spot that we should re-emphasize. Don't get on social media. Finish watching this and then get off of social media.
Yeah.
How do you focus on impact and not image?
Yeah, I think, you know, social media is a great tool if you manage it. You know, the endless scrolling is where we get into trouble. You know, you start getting on LinkedIn, looking at your feed there, then you get on Twitter, then you've got, you know, all these, there's like, I don't know, there's so many social media options out there today. It's just hard to keep up with some of that stuff. And, you know, again, it kind of goes back to what you see is not reality in all cases. So image is not what it's cracked up to be. I think image is important in a way that you need to have a professional and polished image that, you know, oozes credibility and just, you know, knowledge and the ability to get things done. So I think image is important in that respect. But I've always kind of found like one of my values, one of my family values, my business values, because my business and my family are kind of integrated in one, is helping first. And that I think is kind of guided me in that if I'm helping people, the image I want to portray as someone who truly wants to make an impact in someone's life, to help them succeed, to help them have significance, you know, that's kind of my goal at this point in my life. I'm going to be 51 this year. So I'm kind of shifting away from success. You know, I've had tons of success. And it's like, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, now what? And I start talking to friends of mine who are about my age or older and have had a lot of success. And it's like, what do you do now? You got enough money, you got family, you got a place to live. You don't have to worry about, you know, having money in the bank and actually, you know, putting food on the table. What's next? And it's all about significance. You know, it's like, now it's all about helping other people find success and have an impact in the world. And, you know, I think looking good is just overrated too, because we all know people that look good and don't get anything done. They're focused on their own image. And how often do you want to hang out with those people or give them business, right? Probably not much. Those are the people that have got big egos and they're doing it for themselves. And that comes across pretty quickly when you meet other people and you're trying to sell your services as a small business. If you're worried about your image, you're not going to have much time to ask people about what problems you can solve for them. So it's really, for me, I'm always thinking about what problems can I solve for this person in front of me right now. And your image will just take care of itself, because if you solve people's problems or help them find a way that they can solve their own problems, you're having an impact and your image will be one of someone who is, you know, genuinely wants to help others. And that will turn into business eventually. If you're providing value to someone, making an impact, at some point in time, they'll probably start rewarding you with dollar bills or hopefully $100 or $1,000 bills and direct deposit too, which is always kind of nice instead of old checks in the mail, right?
Yeah. And I would say that for me, you know, obviously as professionals, there is what is considered acceptable professional appearance, right? And that's the thing. We have to appear professional to our clients. But I think if we focus on character qualities, that has a much higher impact for ourselves and for our clients, and is much more attractive to people than focusing on our image, right? They don't care. They really don't care if you come to their office in jeans. Okay. I don't usually do that, but they don't really care if you come to their office in jeans, if you're giving them a quality product, right? They don't care so much about what you look like. And yet we all have to maintain an appropriate, you know, professional appearance. We don't want to go in, you know, uncut and, you know, not combed or whatever, no makeup on. That would be frightening. guys, but for me at least. but, you know, those kinds of things where the way we come across is much more valuable based on those character qualities, whether it's integrity or honesty or, like you said, caring and, you know, providing a service, helping people, right? Having that compassion for others and some of those other character qualities, you know, being, you know, responsible and showing up on time when you say you will. That has much more of an impact than anything that you could do to make yourself look good or try to make yourself look, you know, important or like you've got the biggest or the best of this or that, you know, whatever it might be. So it's really important for me to focus on those character qualities. And that's what really attracts me to clients and hopefully attracts the clients to me.
Yeah. And, you know, one of those things, Scott, I think I've even heard you say this before, is I would rather be rich than look rich. Right. And that, I think that falls in here. Like anybody that knows, if you see me pull up, if the weather's nice and I feel like I can get away with it, I will ride my motorcycle. Not always conducive to have to carry my helmet and jacket and all the extra gear around, which means sometimes I take a car. And if I do, I show up in a minivan. Is that my dream car? Nowhere close to it. Not like if you said, hey, show up in your cool car, I doubt anybody would say it's a minivan. But you know what? It's paid off. We're not in debt for it. And like that moment where we like paid that car off and like, we don't owe anything. We're debt free on this. I don't feel like I have an image to maintain anymore, right? Like, again, part of this to me goes back to this idea of I can focus on the impact because I'm not worried about, I got to have two extra clients now to cover this car payment. I don't have a car payment, right? And so there's a certain measure of living a lifestyle. And I think maybe particularly in these service-based industries that all of us are in, living the lifestyle that is not just authentic, but genuinely sustainable gives you the mental space. For me, it's a burden I don't have to deal with, right? I don't have to go out and hard sell somebody because I got to make sure I make my car payment this month. I know all of my bills are paid for. I know we're going to make it. And so because I intentionally live a lifestyle that allows me to do that, I'm mentally free to focus on, I get to provide insane amount of impact for this person. And even if they don't end up becoming a client, I know they will be blessed by the work we're doing. And quite often, because I get to provide such great impact, it has the side benefit of they actually do become a client then, right? Because they sense the value there. But that's just part of being honesty and being a person of honesty and integrity is living that sustainable lifestyle that gives you the ability to meet your clients' needs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really having to focus on the, you know, like you were talking about the minivan, obviously, to carry your family around, right? Yeah. So more focusing on the practicality of it than the show that it's going to provide for, you know, when I drive up to go into the church Sunday, who cares what I'm in, right? I get my kids out of the car and I take them in. And that's why I had to have the big car was because of the kids, right? And carting them around and taking them to activities and baseball and all of that. So it wasn't a matter of show. And hopefully that's not where our focus is. When we're focusing on, here's the practicality of it. I need it for this. Okay, and now I can have an impact. I can take even more kids with me because I've got the bigger car, right? And so I can do even more for families and others. And again, going back to Scott's comment of I'm providing a service, you know, and I'm not paying attention to how that looks.
Yeah, the image is very expensive, and the ROI on it is not very good.
Yeah.
You know, impact almost costs nothing, especially in the work that we do. Like all of us, you know, have very little overhead in our businesses. We can have great impact with very little cost. You know, all it costs is our knowledge, our experience. But image, you know, the other thing for me that image helps with is it helps me to filter out clients I don't want to work with. Because if I have a potential client that image is really important to, they're not going to be a good fit for me. You know, that's just not, those aren't the people I'm looking to help, that I'm probably not going to be a good coach for if they want someone who's got this flashy image, you know. And like I said before, like so often I get the peek behind the curtain in people's finances, and what you see is not reality. You know, most people are broke and in debt, and the ones that are wealthy, they're not living in, you know, big mansions, driving $150,000 cars. And all you got to do is read a little bit of research on that, Millionaire Next Door and Everyday Millionaires is a study that just came out a few years back about 10,000 millionaires. And they found that most millionaires in America have never made six figures. Most live in an average-sized house in an average neighborhood. And their key to success is staying out of debt and living below their means, you know? So it's, image isn't what it's all cracked up to be. So,
yeah.
Right.
It's an actual drain, kind of like what you were saying, Justin. You know, it drains your energy because you've got to focus so much on it to keep it, right?
Yeah.
Where when you're just focusing on impact, that's something you can continue to give. And both people get rewarded from the impact, right? You do as the one who's contributing. You feel like you've done a great thing, and the person who had the impact got the benefit of it as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We have time for one final question. Unless you're watching this and have a question you want to submit, go ahead. We'll leave a few minutes at the end to make sure we get those answered. But the last question that we wanted to discuss, and we've done this maybe a bit in a roundabout way, but it's helpful to get out and be explicit through it. That is, how do you hold yourself accountable, right? I mean, and we've talked on previous broadcasts of nobody's going to know whether I do the work or not today because I'm home by myself. And so there's a certain measure of you have to have a high level of discipline. So what does it look like for the solopreneur or the young entrepreneur to hold themselves accountable to building a dream? And very quickly, I think the things that I would say maybe that we've already touched on is set clear, significant, and meaningful goals, right? If you're not clear what it is you're trying to do and anything goes, you're going to lose the motivation and the discipline very quickly. Number two, I would say then find some sort of way to celebrate and track your wins, right? Even if it's dancing alone in your house or your apartment, like if that's what brings you life and joy, turning on iTunes and dancing is free. If that gives you motivation to keep going, do it. And then find a community. That's part of why we started this network. So whether it's hiring a coach, finding a mentor, plugging into a networking group, joining a mastermind, anything like that, having other people on that journey with you makes a huge difference because there will be days where you're like, I've got no motivation, right? And it helps to be able to pull up my phone and say like, Juanita, I don't feel like going to work today. And she can text back and say, doesn't matter. You still have to, right? Like having somebody on that journey with you cannot be overestimated. So those would be maybe the three quick thoughts I would offer, the things that we've already hinted on. But again, let's be intentional and draw some success to this. Scott, Juanita, how do you two hold yourself accountable in the daily grind?
Well, there's a few things that I do. One is finding an accountability partner, because I think it's really tough to hold yourself accountable. And when you can find someone else, and you can become accountability partners, because in many ways, the coaching I do with folks, business coaching and financial coaching, is as an accountability partner. They tell me what they want to do. I help and guide them in that process. And then I hold them to it and I challenge them, you know, to hit those goals. So I'd say find somebody that you can share your goals with, whether it's your spouse. I don't know that your spouse is always the best accountability partner because they don't usually understand your business related type stuff. I'm sure you guys can relate to that. I think we talked about that before, right? Our spouses, you know, they're not all that interested, honestly, usually. And they don't know if we've hit an accountability objective or not, but that can be helpful. Find someone to hold you accountable. The other thing that I've just noticed over the years is that It's far easier for me to hold myself accountable when I'm doing something I'm truly passionate about. And so that's a good test. Like if you struggle to hold yourself accountable to the work that you're doing, maybe it's because you're not doing the right stuff. You know, if you're really passionate about something, like I know you two are, it's way easier to hold yourself accountable when you're passionate about something because you really, really want it. And so sometimes this could be a good test for those watching is that if you struggle with accountability, maybe first you get some help. You hire a coach, you find an accountability partner. If that doesn't work, then you start to think about, well, maybe what I'm doing, I'm really not passionate about, you know, because if you've got passion for something, that should fuel you through the tough spots. It should fuel you to want to be doing this all the time. Like that's one of my biggest struggles, I think, especially since I'm working from home, like many solopreneurs, is that you're constantly at work. Like imagine like if you're actually working at an office and you never got to go home, that's what, you know, being a solopreneur working from home is like. And it's a double-edged sword because every time I walk by my office, or even when I'm not walking by my office, I'm like at work, right? You know, and it's like, and I don't mind that because I love what I do and I'm passionate about it. But on the flip side, you know, you've got to have a little bit of a balance to sort of turn that off. But that's what I would challenge folks out there. If you're really struggling with accountability, find someone to help. And if that doesn't work, really look at what you're doing. Because if you've got passion for it, it shouldn't be as difficult as it might be for you. Maybe you've just got to find something else, find your passion somewhere else.
Yeah. And I would capitalize on that, Scott, because, you know, I don't have any problem getting up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, because I've got to leave by, you know, 5:30 to be at a training class, because I love to do training, right? But if I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do my books or to do no way, right? Because I don't have the passion for that. It's a necessity. I need to do it, but it's not that passion. Right. And so it's not something that's going to excite me. It's not going to give me any motivation throughout the day. Right. Other than, yes, okay, now my bills are paid. Great. Okay. I got my billing out, but okay, good. But there's not that same motivation for it. And so I think you really struck on something there where you were talking about, okay, if you've had the accountability partner, you've had somebody who's, you know, you've shared your goals with, and you're still not excited about it, really looking at, am I in the right business? Have I got the passion to do what I think I want to do? Because I think that makes a huge difference. And it changes your whole outlook about getting up and getting into your day and focusing on, hey, I've got to get this accomplished because, you know, you're excited about it. And just the idea of an accountability partner. I can't stress that enough as well, that really does make a difference. You know, the first time somebody started to question me, well, you know, how much more did you do this month than last month? I don't know. Well, look at it. Want you to find out. Oh, okay. I should be looking at those kinds of things. Okay. You know, and just somebody who had more of a business mind. It wasn't, you know, me just doing my training and my investigations and that. It was somebody who had the business mind that said, well, you know, have you made progress? So them just holding you accountable can give you those goals then that then become a natural part of your business. Right, then it does become something that, oh, I want to know, because that's going to excite me even more about continuing. It might put me in the doldrums if it was going the other way, and I might be saying, okay, what do I need to do differently because I didn't have an increase this month. And so again, just the enjoyment of it, and then making sure that we're doing the things that are going to make our business profitable. Trying to put aside those things that aren't, you know, like I said, the email for hours. I did want to go back and just comment, but you guys were both talking about social media a few minutes ago. And that's one of my, okay, you get to if you have a win. So I don't have time on social media, right, until I've accomplished something or I've gotten something done that day. And usually it's not until it's like, okay, it's 11 o'clock, you're climbing in bed, you did accomplish something, so you can spend 30 minutes on social media and then it's time for sleep. So,
so when I see you post something on Facebook, I should like respond and send you like clapping emojis because it means that you were good that day, right?
Right. That there was some kind of a win that occurred because I actually got to show up on social media and look at something and find out what the rest of the world is doing. Right. But yeah, cause I just try to avoid it as well because it does, it just sucks your time away. And like you said, the 5 minutes it's not just 5 minutes. You think it's only 5 or 10 minutes and it turns into 35, 45, an hour. Yeah.
One of those, the frame we give it in in coaching is we talk about spending time in areas where you're, where you happen to be both passionate and proficient. Because if you're really good at it and you really enjoy it, you're going to stay focused, you're going to stay disciplined, and you're probably going to make good money, right? I don't make any financial promises, but the likelihood becomes stacked in your favor, because on those days where you're like, I just don't want to, you're going to get to do it anyway. So we talk about what it means to be both passionate and proficient in a given area. And then we also, again, and we can circle this back to where we started, we talk about those energy leaks, right? I've never once spent 30 minutes on Facebook and then gotten off and said, well, that was a good use of my 30 minutes. Yeah. I've regretted it 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you know, even just taking it off of your phone, so you're not tempted when you're, you know, maybe you're sitting out someplace and you've got an extra 5 or 10 minutes before the next appointment, and you think, oh, well, I'll just jump on it. No, you know, get it off your phone. So, yeah.
Yep. Excellent. Always bring a book with you wherever you go.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a number one tip. And maybe we should spend some time in a future episode talking about the books we read and how we stay sharp. We don't have time today. I think that'd be a fascinating topic. We can talk about some of the reading goals and business goals that we set. But some exciting things coming up. We are getting ready to expand this, and we're conducting an interview. So if you are business minded, and what today is March 11, you realize you have a month until tax day. And so we're sure you're busy doing that. Go ahead, get your taxes filed. But we're gonna have some fascinating conversations about the financial side of businesses coming up. And we're going to continue to have these every other week conversations. So if there is a particular topic or subject that you want us to cover in the Bakersfield Mastermind, go ahead and let us know. You can submit your questions here. You can go ahead and email us. We would love to get those questions taken care of. Outside of that, Scott, Juanita, thank you once again for joining me on this live stream as we help business owners continue to not just survive everything that's going on, but to actually thrive. Thank you guys so much.